33 and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading freshman sire, Mosler by Warfront, as well as Divining Rod, Frisian Fire, and Super 99. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the Foaling Barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to...
The PA Horse Breeders Association introduces the Pennsylvania Stallion Series. Four brand new races to be run at parks for PA-sired, PA-bred two-year-olds. There are two $100,000 contests on August 22nd, PA Day at the Races. September 24th, PA Derby Day, has two more races, each with a $200,000 purse. The PA Stallion Series, yet another reason why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race. For more, please visit PABred.com.
3 in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9
At the races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, and second half on this Twin Spires weekend preview. At the races, James Scully standing by. James, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
James.
Going to be a big day at Fairgrounds tomorrow. 8 stake races, 4 graded stakes, a major qualifier for the Kentucky Derby and a major qualifier for Kentucky Oaks. And at Twin Spires, we have a $5,000 all stakes pick 5 hit it and split it promotion. You opt in and put in an all stakes pick 5 ticket, and we are going to split the $5,000 jackpot among all winners. If none of our players hit all 5 races, then we're going to split it evenly, the pool among the most winning legs. So, like I said, opt in there for that. And I'll also get to real quick the Kentucky Derby leaderboard competition. We have that going on still, and we really get into the heart of it right now. You know, it's you opt in at Twin Spires, make a $25 win bet on the remaining qualifiers at Kentucky Derby, and we have a $100,000 pool that we're going to split up to the I think it's like top 20 or so. We have VIP trips to the Derby and other top prizes as well. And the leader right now has 375 points, Steve, Christopher from Minnesota. But we've got, like I said, 8 of these qualifiers coming up at 100 points to winner, 170 total, as well as the Sunland Derby and Lexington Stakes. So still plenty of points to be offered. Check that out at twinspires.com.
Well, and I saved it because I'll post it today on the listing. Where did it go? I had the whole there it is. There's the leaderboard. Come here. Come here, you. Christopher, David in New York, second with 357. James in Kentucky. You're not eligible, so it's not you. 353. Michael in Michigan, 345. And Patrick in Pennsylvania, 340. So there's your top five. And you know, with the kind of points that are going to be available. And if people can, you know, if people can find an upsetter somewhere, you know, especially a real rank outsider type, you could vault yourself into nice spot. But I'll put this up today with the show listing so people can see, and they serve as a reminder too with the three tomorrow and the one on Sunday. And while we're on this topic, I mentioned it yesterday, the opt-in money back offer tomorrow, which is pretty cool. All day long, place a win bet on any race Saturday, and if the horse does not win, but finishes second or third, you get your money back up to $10. So you essentially can, you know, can take 12 $10 win pops, you know, try to find horses or, you know, that have a chance to win. Obviously, you know, you prefer to, if their prices especially, you prefer to, you know, hit it for $10. But if they can hit the board, you get your money back. So those are fun. Don't forget to opt in. And you know, you got to check all of these things every week
as well.
James, nothing big from last weekend, although I can't remember. I lose track. Did you hit something last Friday?
No, my play Friday at Oakland scratched, Steve. Okay. So we'll get back to that. I'll try to get after it again today here a little bit later. But I'll just go ahead and start with some thoughts on that Fairgrounds card. I was listening to Scott Shapiro earlier, and, you know, one thing about Scott was when he was down there for the Risen Star, he tabbed Captivating Moon. Calvary Charge on top at 35-1 on the Fairgrounds handicap. He was all over Epicenter. He had a really good day down there that day. He stole my thunder, too. I didn't coordinate with him at all. But in race number two, number seven, Tapu, 8-1 for Brandon Walsh. I really think that race on the undercard of the Risen Star that a Momentous won. Momentous was a first-time starter by Arrogate. He's back working for Pletcher now. Be interested to see where he goes. Marcellus is later on the card for Asmussen, but Tapu really just didn't have any chance in there. He is a half brother to a pair of turf winners, including a stakes winner. Really comes from a good dam, and you know, I just think he's going to relish the switching surface and stretch out the two turns. And it's encouraging to see Tyler Gaglione take them out. So I like him. He's 8-1 on the morning line in race number seven. As I mentioned, the runner-up in that race, Marcellus, he'll be a big favorite in there. You know, maybe number seven, Strobe, will take a little money. He's an Into Mischief colt making his debut for Brad Cox, and he's out of Flashing, who won the multiple grade one winner that won the test at 7 furlongs and the Gopher Wand at 1 mile and 1/8. So, you know, she's already off to a good start as a broodmare and has a bunch of bullet works. But Marcellus, like I said, I think he's a future stakes type for Asmus, and I don't think he'll be beating him. I'll be watching that race with great interest, Steve.
Well, you know, and we talked about this race already with Chad Schexnader on Tuesday, and then yesterday I thought the case that was made by Frank McGoey was worth noting. And there's a firster from Low Profile Connections, the Run Happy Colt for Andrea Ali with Aubrey Green, Lagoon. 59-2 bullet from the gate last week. This one, you know, here it is, what, March of the three-year-old season. You know, Run Happies have established that, you know, they're not overly precocious as two-year-olds. This is the right time. And even more notably than the bullet, Andrea Ali, who last year went 22 out of 103, so she hit it a 21% clip last year, in terms of her win percentage. Not that win percentage, you know, sets me off, but for a low profile connection, that's a big number. And you know, she's only had six starters at the meet, and obviously these are the last 4 days of the season. She's 0 for 6 with 3 board hits. She's 2 for 8 with her first-time starters the last year and a half with a 7.55 ROI. So that means you had two $15 winners. Lagoon, I don't know if this horse can overcome both, you know, high-profile types like Marsalis and Strobe, but this she may be more than that 10-1. And I put her third as my best value type underneath. And I thought that horse was well worth noting. And the horse of Amos is all the way on the outside. Can't Hush This, the Not This Time, ran okay after a bad start in the debut in the momentous Marsalis race and was 7-1. So Can't Hush This is probably, you know, the other consideration past the two favorites.
He drifted up to 7-1. You know, it was interesting where Momentous was like 7 or 8-1 in the early betting because this Can't Hush This was like 3-1 and then 7-2. And he drifted up and Momentous drifted down with a lot of late money. So you're right. You know, he looked like he was like, you know, not going to do anything. And I thought he finished up pretty well in that race at first asking for Tom Amos, Can't Hush This.
There you go. That's the seventh. All right.
And now looking at the Turning the Stakes action in the Tom Benson, you know, I mean, from a multi-race perspective, I do respect Lake Lucerne and Handy Woods and Lovely Ride. Lovely Ride's really the only runner in this field out of these fairgrounds turf stakes this meet that I really give a legitimate chance to in here. But the filly that I'm going to go with on top is Gam's Mission. And the reason why, one thing I really like about her was that she was really, I thought, just coming to hand for Cherie DeVoe last summer. You know, won a bunch of races in a row, including the Grade 3 Regret at Churchill. All those races were a mile and a 16th, or the Regret was a mile and an 8th. And she stretched out to a mile and a quarter and a mile and 3/16 at Belmont and Saratoga. I don't think she found those distances per se to her liking, and plus, you know, was running against pretty good horses. But I liked her effort in the Winter Memories. She completely stumbled out of the gate that day. She was so far back on the far turn, and when Saez swung her out for the stretch run, I thought she finished great to just miss on the wire. And I think that, you know, she's 2 for 3 at a mile and a 16th. I think there'll be a little pace. There's going to be some pace in this race, and I look for her to run a big race without a Biscuitza Gam's Mission.
Yeah, she's got to be used. I discussed with Scott earlier too. I've ended up going 5 deep in there. This is a messy race, and the first time Hartman scares me too, that Clara Peters.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, her form is so good, and, you know, she's going to step up in class. So, you know, basically, you know, if I'm going to probably go 4 deep, but I mean, I did take a look at Clara Peters as well, and even the other horse that had been running in some of those allowance claimer races, Russian Mafia. I thought that was a pretty nice late kick last time. More like underneath, like vertical exotic type, so perhaps.
All right.
Turning to the New Orleans Classic, I do think Olympiad, you know, horse to beat. One thing I like about him, Steve, is that in his last two races at two turns, his first races at two turns, and just using our BriskNet numbers, he got a 108 late pace rating and a 106 late pace rating. He wins both those races by open lengths. I just think that's a real encouraging sign. I do think if anybody's going to beat him, it's going to be Promise Keeper, because it just, like, to me, he was so eligible to, A, need that race, and then, B, he lost all chance when he just fell out of the gate. So I expect him to break running from the rail or Kyle Gaglione, and these two might run 1-2 until they flip order in the stretch, or, you know, if Olympiad for any reason comes up a little bit short at the 9-furlong distance, then Promise Keeper's horse to beat, in my opinion.
All right.
And then looking at the Munoz Memorial Classic, you know, I take a look at, like, Sacred Life, and, you know, you look at his record, he's 7 for 23, which is almost a third of his starts wins. But, you know, this horse had 5 wins and 5 seconds from his first 12 starts. He won like his first 4 races. He was won a whole bunch of races since October of 2019. He's 2 for 11, and he is winless in his last 5 starts as a favorite. In fact, I can make a case that Sacred Light's best distance is a mile or a mile and a 16th. He's going a mile and 1/8 in this spot. He's going to be a real low short price. You know, you have to respect Chad Brown, but I almost think his other horse, Devamani, looks better than him. You know, I like the fact he's won, you know, two of his last four races, and he may have needed a start last time. But I'm going with number 9, Sen on top. And I got to say, you know, I was on him in that Fairground Stakes. And if you look at his, you know, on paper, he runs 4th. And it was pretty easy to be disappointed that he, you know, came up short like he did. But I do think in that race, you know, wide the entire way. I thought in the top of the stretch, just watching the replay, he basically disappears to lose focus. He's like a little bit green at times. It's his first, you know, his first race at 4, only his 4th career start. But then he just like kicks in late and he finally finds it and finishes. And I just think that's a great race to build upon for Sen. I think he's got, you know, the tactical speed to not be too far back on a turf that could be, you know, a little bit negative towards deep closers. And I'm just expecting him to move forward for Brendan Walsh and Tyler Gaglione, and I'm going to give him a slight edge over the Chad Brown horses in the Muniz Memorial.
We were all, it's funny, that was he was the universal the universal good thing, Santin.
Yeah, he was from 12-1 to the 5-2 favorite.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, we all landed on him. We got to use him again.
Yeah. And then and the Fairgrounds Oaks, you know, I won't be surprised to see Echo Zulu win, but I will just say, you know, she had a lot of speed last season, and I just think she got to that Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies and seen a lot of, like, future one-turn types just get there and just, like, overpower them with their class and everything. And when she returned to Asmussen, like, you know, like at the beginning of the year, you know, they were talking like everything was on the table. And I just, like, I could just, like, poke a little bit of, like, a hole in the fact that, you know, he didn't get her back to the work tab till February 8th. He's had her on a real tight schedule. And she's coming back, you know, in a big race for fillies at a mile and a 16th, with her main target being really the Kentucky Oaks in 4 or 5 weeks later. So I'm saying she could be a little bit vulnerable in this spot, and I'm gonna play to me with this pick 5, Steve. If you are using Epicenter and Echo Zulu on your ticket, you're gonna be with like 90% or maybe more of the players. I mean, it essentially becomes a pick 3 for you. So if I'm just gonna use Echo Zulu and Epicenter, I'm playing a bigger denomination than 50 cents. I might not be too spreading too deep, but I might look to play $5 or even $10 tickets if I like them. My strategy is going to be to try to beat Echo Zulu, and I'm going to use 3 horses that haven't been too exposed, I think, so far, starting with number 3, Favor, who's a filly that I think is just going to relish the added ground, and I think she's sharp now for Pletcher. You know, she's been beating some horses that I think are okay. You know, when she broke her maiden, the 3rd-place finishers in Arrogate Philly just broke her maiden by 6. The Philly last time that ran 3rd was stakes place behind Kathleen O. So she hasn't been beating a bunch of tomato cans in those maiden and allowance races, and I just think she's moving forward. I thought Turnaloose ran a good race on the dirt. Obviously, she's got to keep running faster. And Burma Breezy is a filly that has a little bit of a look to me. She went into that Silver Bullet Day in her 3rd start and, you know, ran an okay 3rd, but she's needed that. She benefited from that experience, I thought, last time. Ran a much better race beating Sequist in that February 18th allowance and looked good doing so for Matt Shire. So I'm going to use Turner Loose, Favor, and Burma Breezy on my pick 5 ticket and try to beat Echo Zulu, Steve.
It's so funny because going into the weekend, and I kept expecting. I thought, you know, they've been so slow, you know, not slow, but so unsure about when she was going to be able, Echo Zulu, to engage and you know, start her season. And so I thought, you know, whenever she turns up, that, you know, this is where you take your shot against. And then, you know, when the field comes together the way it did, and when particularly when I saw the figs, I thought, geez, I mean, she just has to basically come back and run the same kind of race she was running, you know, last year at two. And like Jay said just minutes ago, too, I mean, the fact that she's back and you know, that they feel that she's close enough to, you know, prep for, you know, the Oaks in this spot, you know, is a pretty strong endorsement. So the potential... Right? I mean, the potential upsetters here, they have got to improve. If she improves at all, James, I don't know how they beat her.
Right. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, you know, she's coming in off of a series of workouts and she's running against these horses. Their only advantage is really recency and, you know, arguably fitness. I mean, you know, these horses are more fit having raced this season than Echo Zulu, who when she stretched out the two turns last fall, she had both those things going for her. So, you know, to me, a little bit of it is, you know, I mean, you know, I thought that off of the spinaway win, they could have run her in the Alcibiades or another two-turn race, and they opted for Fazette. And I thought that race fit her perfectly because it was a one-turn mile, and she has so much speed. And with that speed and with that run style, if that recency and fitness isn't there for her, she could be potentially vulnerable going two turns in late March.
There we go. All right. That gets us to the Derby.
And gets me to Derby, and you know, I'm a person that like thinks, hey, Call Me Midnight, Pioneer Medina, and Rattle and Roll might have some good races in their future. I mean, they got to keep, you know, moving forward and such. But I like all those horses' potential in a sense to pop up and run big races going forward. But I just see the Louisiana Derby shaping up on paper exactly like the Risen Star. I think Epicenter has a lot going for him. He's coming into this race perfectly for Asmus with these like 5-furlong bullet works. He's just razor sharp, and he's just going to control the pace from the start and go into the Kentucky Derby on a good note. So I look for, you know, Rattle and Roll especially. You know, he's got a horse that's going to benefit from races with more pace in them. And if he comes running late to be a good second, that could be an ideal setup for him in his next race.
All right.
Yeah, you know, because I'm just like, hey, I mean, I'm giving Epicenter a better chance of winning than Echo Zulu, and that's sort of the way I'm going to play it in a Big Five sense.
And that was my inclination too, but then I kind of morphed, and I mean.
You know, the whole key in there really, to me, is Pioneer Medina.
Right.
I think he has more speed, natural quickness than both Zozo's and Galt. And if he's not out there pressing, you know, at least trying to, you know, keep him honest a little bit, you know, ideally for the rest of the runners, making an early run at him before the stretch, then, you know, perhaps, you know, but if he's out there a couple lengths clear, he's just going to get into like that cruising speed he showed in the Risen Star. And it's difficult for me to envision him losing under that scenario.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right. There we go. There's Saturday. Anything non-fairgrounds from Saturday?
No, nothing non-fairgrounds for Saturday. I will go to the fairgrounds today for my last I got a basketball pick, but I got my last Saturday, my last second Friday pick is number 2, Ours and Theirs. Race number 8 at Fairgrounds. It's a Louisiana bred maiden special weight at 6 furlongs. But this filly, this is her second start. In her debut, she got bet down to 9-2, got bet a little bit, and she just completely missed the break. But she made a fine middle move. I went back and watched that race while extremely wide and then flattened out in the stretch, finishing mid-pack. She's capable of much better today, and she's listed as an enticing 12-1 on the morning line. Number 2, Ours and Theirs, in race 8 at the Fairgrounds today.
Really nice. All right. We got, and again, we got the, this is a Louisiana bred, In fact, the card is dotted with Louisiana breads. So you got kind of a under-the-radar connection scenario here, too.
Yeah, and I got four games today, NCAA tournament. Ooh. My best play is Providence, plus 7.5 against Kansas. Providence is an elite defensive squad, a really terrific offensive rebounding, and good free throw shooting. They're 8-1 against the spread as an underdog, 4-0 getting more than 5 points, 4-2 against ranked teams. Kansas, as we saw last Saturday versus Creighton, is more than comfortable playing level competition. They are 4-6 against the spread against ranked teams in the last 10 games, 11-13 just against the spread in their last 24. So them laying a bunch of points against a Providence team that's playing with some confidence, I expect it to be much closer than 7.5.
Well, and yesterday, Rich Eng, Providence is one of his plays today. Who else?
That's it for today.
All right.
I'll be rooting for St. Peter's, that's a lot of points to get, but I just hope they don't get all overwhelmed by the whole situation.
Well, I think if they didn't get overwhelmed last week,
No doubt about it.
I'd like to see.
Their guards, incredible. Those two guards they had were averaging like 13 points and 9 points a game going into the tourney, and, you know, they dropped 27-30 on Kentucky and then came back and both had a big good game against Murray State. So that, you know, guard play gets it done in the tourney. You look at Arizona last night against Houston. Arizona had all those big guys, but Houston just killed them with their guards.
Well, St. Peter's, Purdue, Providence, Kansas, the Tar Heels, and UCLA. There's a historic matchup, and certainly rooting. I guess if there's a rooting interest, heavy rooting interest. I mean, I've always been a Kansas fan from my days at Kansas City, and dated a girl that was KU and Janice, and we went to a lot of Allen Fieldhouse games and the 88. The 88. We were there at Kemper Arena for the 88 NCAA championship that they won, which was really fun. I've been to a lot of major sporting events, and that was as special as anything I've attended.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, just like I would love to go to Allen Fieldhouse and see that. And, I mean, you're right. Heck, Adolph Rupp, you know, he played basketball at Kansas. Was it Fog Allen, the legendary? I think Dr. J. Yeah, Fog Allen was their legendary coach, and I think that he replaced Naismith, or if I got that right. So their history of basketball goes all the way back to like the beginning of it.
Yeah, it's a special. It's amazing. I don't even watch that much. I watched a lot of Colgate this year. I don't watch that much other NCAA basketball the rest of the year until the conference tournaments and then this. I mean, this is as great as it gets. And it's funny because I think my professional career, I don't remember, you know, being younger and being as interested. But when I got to Cincinnati, originally sent there by Cannon Mills, and then I went to work for Procter & Gamble. But we got to go to those regional games. And I remember going to Rupp, I think for Sweet 16 games. I should look this up. This had to be around 83 or 84. And then when I lived in Charlotte, you got to go to the, what was it called? I think the Charlotte, the Coliseum, the Charlotte Coliseum.
Did you see anybody notable when you went to the Sweet 16? That might have been like the Richie Farmer or Rex Chapman era.
Probably.
I don't know. Rex Chapman didn't make Sweet 16, but Richie Farmer did. He's like a legend of that tournament.
I remember getting gas right, getting gas in Kentucky, and seeing on those Right, the Secretary of State, yeah. Whatever, the, you know, those little stickers on the gas, right?
Secretary of Agriculture.
There's Richie Farmer's autograph on the gas pumps. It always makes me laugh. I should really look these up. I mean, I was in Charlotte, in Charlotte for like $12, you would get a ticket and you could sit there for like 6-7 hours. And there'd be 4 games, 8 hours. There'd be, you know, those region before it got to be so produced and so, you know, distributed on television the way it was. And it really has grown on. It's become one of my favorite non-racing sporting events.
Yep, absolutely.
That and the Eagles. James Scully, everybody. James_Scully111 on your Twitter. Huge weekend next week, James. Are you traveling at all? Are you going anywhere?
No, not going anywhere, Steve. I'll be following it closely from home, but wish you the best of luck, and everybody, good luck this weekend.
James Scully, folks, there you go. All right, let's reach for Nick Tamaro. We'll keep going. We got Mary Rampolini coming up and Popo, and I'll see if I can't find one of the KKs. Either Kevin Kirstein and or Kevin Kilroy to get there if they've got a big play for tomorrow. And you know, as you heard from Frank yesterday, McGoey, the Sunday card is very good. And actually, just looking at today, I mean, the fields, they got big, nice field sizes. And a nice variety, actually. The Louisiana bread's helping out quite a bit. Five out of the 10 races today. Yeah, the second, the fourth, the sixth, and the eighth and the tenth. Yeah, so all the even races. Louisiana breads. And James today giving you ours and theirs. All right, having a little bit of a challenge getting Nick in here, so we'll keep at it. Come back to the use both numbers, ours and theirs. The two in the eighth, James's last second Friday. I can't find the Sunday fairgrounds. Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Can't find the Sunday. All right. Well, we'll having trouble getting Nick too. Let me get Mary Rampolini then instead. We'll go right because I don't want to waste too much time. We'll get to Mary and we can do some Sunland Park with her as well as. As you saw, she must. I'm guessing Mary was on hand at for Secret Oath's workout this morning. Mary Rampolini, good morning.
Hi, Steve. How are you today?
I'm great. And as I wrote you yesterday, I felt terrible. I mean, Hammer is handling Oaklawn, so we haven't spoken to you all winter.
Oh, well, he's the perfect person to talk to. He's right in the thick of things. So I'm happy to talk to you, honored to talk to you today, Steve.
Well, let's grab a quick Oaklawn note because I saw that you were on top of Secret Oath's drill this morning.
And she prepares theirs for site, fans and players everywhere. We're going to try next week at the Arkansas Derby.
Yes, she was... the very first worker this morning, so that's a good way to get started if she could get across the wire first. But she was the first worker this morning, and she just breezed by herself an easy 5/8 and 101. Very nice looking work, and that is scheduled to be her final work, according to Mr. Lucas. So Contreras will be up for the Arkansas Derby, which will be drawn, as you well know, on Sunday. So,
well, looking forward to the way that comes together, and. The excitement around a filly, you know, the filly facing the boys is just crazed, right? It's amazing how this excites people.
It is. It adds a layer of, you know, to use Mr. Lucas's words, it adds a layer of color to the day. You know, it adds some color to the Arkansas Derby Day program, which is already exciting. They'll have five stakes that day. But, it surely is a topic racing fans embrace.
Mary, before we talk about Sunland and Sam Houston, and, of course, the Texas Champions card, we're going to talk to Nick Tamaro in a little bit. But before we do that, any other Oaklawn news and notes that we need to be aware of?
Well, just primarily, you know, we'll have a lot of workers, you know, probably festival-oriented workers going forward now. The festival itself, Steve, will be held over really the entire month of April. We'll see the Count Fleet Sprint be run on April 16th this year. And then we've got the Apple Blossom and Oaklawn Handicap, each of those worth $1 million later in the month on April 23rd. So kind of that festival feel throughout the whole month.
Well, looking forward, yeah, the way in which the racing festival of the South, Mary, the way we used to have it, the intense, you know, truncated end of the meet festival in the South, it's changed. They've taken that. It's still delicious frosting, but it's spread over a sheet cake now.
That's right. Yeah, it was that one week of intensity for sure, and it's nice because it really puts an exclamation point on a lot of Saturdays for April, you know?
Well, true. And now with the 4-day weeks that have cropped back up here, at least Hammer talked about that just a little bit ago. The 3-day thing has been, and you know, I was at Oaklawn twice, right at the beginning of the meet, and, you know, then for the 2 weeks of Rebel and the HBPA convention. And, you know, the horsemen, basically sitting out 4 days has been a little tough on people. I asked Lewis Sellum a couple of weeks ago about it, and they're, you know, they're taking everything into consideration. It feels like it kind of gave a disjointed feel to the meet. If you know what I mean, it's like every weekend is sort of like, you know, you've basically forgotten what transpired the previous week. There's no continuity.
You mean having a shorter race week versus the more traditional 4-day. Yes, like you said, you talked to Lou Sella, the president of Oaklawn, and one thing that I think is great about Lou is while they're trying different things, he is always open to either going back to a previous way or testing something different going forward. And he said that just exactly what he told you when I had talked to him about it, that structure, whether a 3 or 4 day structure next meet, that will be discussed. They get a really test run. They're in the middle of a test run with these Thursdays. We're having 4 consecutive Thursdays. I think this has been the second week of it added to that Friday through Sunday calendar. Because of the inclement weather, the days we lost, the 4 days we lost to the snow and such. So he's going to, you know, assess all those numbers and stuff, you know, before they make any kind of date structure decisions for next season as far as race week structure. They do want to bring back the December racing for, I guess you could say, later this year again.
And we're going to start a week later, and just have a couple of weekends in December, and so there's, you know, an ongoing evaluation essentially to how this is going to go forward. In the meantime, the crowds turn out like almost nowhere else.
That's the one thing I was going to say. That's what's been amazing is it's a 30,000 guarantee. Every Saturday, it's been incredible. So,
well, there's big days in other parts of your expansive territory, Mary, because Sam Houston, the Texas Champions Night tomorrow, and we did talk to Trey Stiles on Wednesday, and Nick Tamaro will join us next. But Sunland Park, of course, with the Sunland Park Derby, and we've missed the Sunland Park action, you know, kind of absent from the schedule during pandemic. Let's start at Sam Houston and some notes out of your book for tomorrow night at SHRP.
Yeah, you know, just looking over the races, Steve, I thought J.R. Caldwell is very invested in the day. He and his owners, he'll have seven horses in five of the stakes. There's a total of seven stakes on the card, all for Texas breds. And they're very rich. The last 2 years, the purse for each of the divisional stakes has been boosted from $75,000 to $100,000. Texas is hitting on all cylinders right now. And so it's a $700,000 day with those Texas Champions Day races. And because of that, J.R. Caldwell really has taken this last year to really target these races. So his horses are very interesting, starting with the Singapore Flash in the Richard King. And he won't have to face Sunlit Song, who did not enter back. So Singapore Flash is a very up-and-coming member of the division, I think, for that turf route division, I should say.
It's a fun card, and I got, now it's missing. There it is. It's underneath. Here we go. It's underneath. I've got three sets of PPs. I've got Fairgrounds, Sam Houston, and Sunland. Those are my only three. Sometimes there's five or six sets coming into the weekend. I had a lot
you had
of
a
fun.
Real Southwestern flair this weekend.
Well, big time. I mean, this is your, you know, we always say Mary Rampolini's got the best tires in in racing journalism, having
it's about time for a new set. I will say that. I need to get a new set of tires on my car. So,
well,
it's a good reminder. Thank you. I don't think of those things.
Well, and I did not see you. I didn't get to see you at Hot Springs.
I know it's been very busy. It's been very busy, and I know you've been in town a lot this season. So
yeah, the opening weekend, and then the 2 weeks Rebel, and then the following with HBPA. I realized as I was driving back to New Orleans after the show Friday, I said, "Gee, I never saw Mary." So all right, let's.
I spent a lot of opening weekend out on the apron. It was gorgeous. It was in the 70s for December, early December, and I really enjoyed kind of being a fan opening weekend. That shorter race week just kind of changed my schedule a little bit, and it was a lot of fun, you know. So,
well, this card, I had a lot of fun with. With Trey, and I'm anxious to also hear what Nick is thinking. Is there a horse any place else on the card that? And I'm just pulling up. Let me pull up your selections.
I mean, so Mr. Moneybags is always fun to watch.
Yeah.
Run, and he's going in the Spirit of Texas, the sprint race, and he'll be a strong favorite in there. But he's really. Really a marquee horse for Texas. I mean, he's been a very good horse for a very long period of time, and he's always fun to watch run. And I think the Star of Texas is a good race. That's the mile division for the older horses, and I'm looking forward to seeing what Kenai Bob does. J.R. Caldwell will have Algebra in there, who will look good off a runner-up finish to Mr. Moneybags last time. And Direct Dial, of course, is a past winner of this race. But like I said, I think I'm interested to watch and see what Kenai Bob does. So he's kind of a horse, I think, that'll be nice for this season coming up in Texas, which is what they were pointing him for. Francisco Bravo had given him time off, and the idea was to target the Texas bred program for this horse.
The Kenai Bob was my push, too.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I leaned in that direction. And Trey wanted Algebra. He liked JR in there.
Yes, I think, and you know, Mr. Moneybags being a standard type horse or a good measuring stick, I should say, they're both coming out of a race against him, so I liked that.
What did which was the there was one of the 3-year-old races that we
Yes,
look
at the Groovy and the Barrel Lass, both going 6 furlongs.
Yes, and what did you do in the Barrel Lass?
The Barrel Lass, yeah, nice race here. You know, I guess you have to like Texas Thunder. She's going for her third stakes win, so she's 2 for 2 in the stakes program this meet at Sam Houston. So you have to like her a little bit. And I know Jared Caldwell is looking forward to Jan's turn to win, running her. And he also has a filly named Texas Ascot Queen. So again, with J.R. Keene on these races, I find those horses interesting.
Very good. All right, let's shift gears. Let's go to Sunland on Sunday. And I'll be honest, I looked at the Derby. I haven't really gone too deep in anything else.
Yeah, I mean, the Derby, we've got a lot of Southern California influence with Doug O'Neill coming in with the probable favorite there, Slow Down Andy. And we've also got Straight Up G, who's already come in from Southern California and won at Sunland this meet, taking the Mind That Bird Derby. And then we've also got Fowler Blue, another who had shipped in from Southern California for the Mind That Bird Derby, who's back. So, yeah, a lot of influence there for this Kentucky Derby points race.
Grade 3, mile and an eighth, and from the local standpoint, hard not to look at the Sunland features and not mention what Todd Fincher is sending out. And Bye Bye Bobby, the entity in here.
Yes, Bye Bye Bobby, really interesting horse. You know, he broke his maiden in stakes race and that in his debut in the Zia Park Juvenile. And then just talking to Todd just through the prep season of the Sunland series, for the Sunland Derby series, you know, he's not really had the right kind of trip. Bye Bye Bobby. He's not been pleased with how, you know, he's had trouble in both of his races, and he's been right there. So he's kind of horse that could step up and run a big one. He's a nice horse, you know. He's a half-brother to that poker player, a grade 3 winner, and Quality Road Colt. He's got a license to run very well here, and I think horses that are stabled down in Sunland, that are stabled in New Mexico, I think you have to give them a lot of consideration just for things like altitude, you know. So.
Well, and there's not pronounced pace in here. Straight Up G clearly is gonna go to the lead with Gonzalez, and I suppose that Slow Down Andy adding the blinkers, you know, second off the layoff, coming off the gate bullet at Santa Anita, and it's interesting that he showed speed when he was sprinting as a 2-year-old, Mary, and has become kind of a mid-pack stalk and go type subsequently when he went 2 turns starting at Los Al, and it looks like Doug wants to, you know, kind of get him involved early again like he did when he sprinted against Calbreds back in October and November, because he's really the only other obvious player to, you know, put some pace pressure on Straight Up G.
Yeah, and I think you're right about Bye Bye Bobby. I think what you started the conversation with, he's a horse that could be up in it a little bit too if he wanted to. So, that's interesting. Yeah, it's interesting. And you could see Slow Down Andy sitting right off of Straight Up G there, getting a really nice trip, you know.
Hey, Mary, the two Asmussens, any thoughts here? You got Classic Moment moving over. It came in actually for the Mind That Bird Derby, but spends the mornings at Houston is where he stalled. And Costa Terra, who tried to start the year on the Derby trail in the Southwest, is an Oaklawn-based Asmussen Winchell, homebred, the gun runner out of that nice teardrop that makes him a that makes him a half to a whole bunch of the nice Winchells. Oh my gosh, the
Pneumatic horse, I think you're talking about, and the tip of your tongue. That's a nice, so the whole family, yes. So.
Well, but these two, you know, the Asmussen barn, obviously Epicenter tomorrow, and you had Morello in New York 2 weeks ago. This region, though, has kind of disappointed thus far.
Well, as far as, you know, as far as like the classic moment in the Casa Terra, just talking to Steve, he's hoping to see classic moment show a little more speed. He feels he's capable of showing a little more speed than he did in the Mind That Bird Derby. So he's a horse that could be closer. And then Casa Terra, just talking to Steve earlier in the season, he's excited about this horse, but he said he's just not there yet. You know, he said the talent's there, but as far as the stage of this horse's development, it's coming along, you know, it's coming along, but he wasn't at that, you know, peak stage. So he's a horse I'm thinking that could step up and run a nice race here, because that conversation was earlier in the year. So
all right.
I'm anxious to see what Casa Terra does. And like I said, for this race, for Steve, he's won two past runnings of the Sunland Derby, so he's certainly been effective in this race in the past. He knows what to bring in to be effective, you know. So,
well, let's talk about the Oaks too, Mary, because this is a group. Somebody's going to come marauding out of here and is going to win themselves a nice $300,000 pot. And you've got a number of locals, and of course, we've got an affectionate favorite. Personal, not going to be a favorite on the board, but how about Joel Marr sending out the California Chrome, 3-year-old daughter of Pepper's Pride, Callie?
That's exciting.
Yeah,
yes.
Second start.
That's really exciting. Now that's another, I think, reason for fans to get excited, just to watch Callie run, and a great name too. So
not going to be. Certainly one of the choices after that kind of modest debut. She's a maiden. She was fifth in her debut, but it's great to see the latest Pepper's Pride product. And she has really not. She's kind of struggled seemingly as, you know, as a broodmare. But the rest of this group, they made the Asmussen optionality the favorite.
Yeah, optionality's been hooking Secret Oath over at Oaklawn. And, you know, I feel like that last race at Honeybee, I'm just really draw a line through it. This filly's a really consistent filly. And just in talking to Steve Asmussen, you know, she's already won in New Mexico. So she's proven to be effective both on the road and in New Mexico. So those are some points to her credit, I think, coming into this race. And then, you know, I thought the Queen of Thorns horse for Peter Urton seemed exciting. And just talking to him, you know, he liked the timing of his race. There were some reasons he wanted to bring her in here, and I'm kind of looking forward to seeing her run just after talking to him. So,
how about that horse on the outside, the Mr. Speaker daughter for Bart Hone, Miss Hard Knocks?
Yeah, she's certainly done nothing wrong, huh? She's a two-time stakes winner as well, and well proven over the surface there. She's won both of the local preps here for the Sunland Park Oaks. So yeah, definitely, Steve, you have to give her propers in here for sure. And she's got that good speed. So,
and it's interesting because she was kind of a closing sprinter before she stretched out in the Island Fashion. And then in the Island Fashion, she attended the pace and showed, you know, the ability to, you know, more or less be in the race flow. She might be pretty tactical, and she may have to be from out there.
Yeah, it's good that she does have some foot there, that she showed some foot. She's going to have to get positioned from out there. And, you know, this is nice. Steve, you had mentioned the $300,000 purse. That's up from the standard $200,000 that had been the case pre-pandemic. So it's really nice boost to the purse here. And, of course, these fillies also will earn Kentucky Oaks points, those that finish in the top four, with 50 to the winner here. So,
the other open company stakes, there is the Harry Henson, which goes as the sixth, the mile, flat mile, for fillies and mares. And then there's the Bill Thomas Memorial. And I really like that Bill Thomas is memorialized there or anywhere. 6.5 furlong main track sprint, and some interesting things actually going on in here, including Doug O'Neill sending Team Merchants out of the kill row. So he's got a turf to dirt, route to sprint, blinkers on going for him, the Nyquist colt. And Any other thoughts? There's also, of course, the New Mexico bred stakes on the card.
Yes, and those have been boosted in value. But as well, each of the three-year-old divisions are worth $250,000. So nice. They have had a steep purse hike. So the whole day, the stakes, seven of them worth $1.6 million. But back to the Bill Thomas Memorial and Team Merchants, I would only add, because it's kind of a fun fact, that he is a full brother to Slow Down Andy. And just talking to Doug O'Neill this week, he said the brothers, you know, the siblings are coming in both with blinkers on. They're invading New Mexico. So they're both adding blinkers, both of the siblings. And anyways, it's just kind of fun. So I'll be interested to see what Team Merchants does ahead of the Sunland Derby, whether it's going to be a good day for the family or not, huh?
Exactly. Well, the card, 12-race card, and there is a race after the Sunland Derby. However, the pick five and pick four that are slated at the end of the cards, end of the races, the seventh, the New Mexico University, that starts the pick five, and that's an all stakes that ends with the Derby. And then there's an all stakes pick four that goes from the Breeders' Oaks, the New Mexico Breeders' Oaks, through the regular Open Company Oaks into the Breeders' Derby for the boys and the Sunland Derby. So there's nice all three-year-old pick four as well. And the nice card here, Mary. It's going to be a good day at Sunland on Sunday.
Yeah, you are on top of it. I am impressed because you are a very busy man and cover a lot of racing. And I am very impressed with your attention to detail for the Sunland's big day.
Not at all. Mary, great to connect, and we'll be watching your reporting. Mary Rampolini, everybody, and what's your late spring plan? What responsibilities are coming up for you?
Well, we'll end here at Oaklawn on May 8th, so we'll be here through the end of the season, May 8th, Mother's Day, and then I will head to the Dallas area, and we'll have be on track at Lone Star Park, and then we'll have, you know, in the near future, we'll have Louisiana Downs coming online. We've got Evangeline Downs coming online soon. So we've got, you know, different meets starting up, you know, Ruidoso down the line. So we've got a lot of summer action in this market.
Very nice. Mary Rampolini, everybody. And Mary keeps all the DRF information collated and offered out there. You follow her on Twitter, DRF Rampolini with the two L's. And Mary, great to talk to you. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Steve. It was fun.
Not at all. Bye. Mary Rampolini. And I just kind of funny that we didn't get a chance to see Mary over the winter. At Oaklawn, where we usually do. And let me just got to send something out. So there we go. Okay. Nick Tamaro got back to us and couldn't pick up when we called him earlier. So we'll get him now. All right. So bear with me one second. I've got to. All right. Done. Beautiful. And Tam. All right. You're going to be as well prepared for Texas Champions Night, right, as you've ever been in the history of Texas Champions Night. Nick Tamaro ready for us this morning. And Nick, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How you doing?
I'm good. I just was laughing because, you know, Trey was with me on Wednesday and we just had Mary Rampolini. So I think listeners will be more prepared for this Texas Champions card than any that's ever come before it.
Well, that's how it should be, Steve. Let's be honest. You know, if you're looking forward to tomorrow, what you're looking forward to most is Texas Champions Day. And, of course, the opportunity that some are going to take to qualify for the NHC, I will count myself among those very excited to see the date change on the NHC. That means that I should have no hindrances whatsoever. So very good result.
Outstanding. Because, of course, it was not happening last year for you. So the
I mean, I'd like to think that they really moved it for me.
They did. From what I understand, I was privy to some of the discussions. So they said they said we can't hold another NHC without Nick.
Well, the Vegas restaurant scene definitely benefits too. So it's the Convention and Visitors Bureau was probably like, yeah, no, we can't go a calendar year without him. So no, very exciting. But yeah, Texas champions, they should really be great. We've got. You know, it's a good chance for a celebration of Texas racing in general because we're really on the upswing. And I've been telling people this now for the last couple of years with the added funds to the purse accounts of the horse industry escrow account. It's been a nice resurgence, you know, and seeing some of the younger trainers around and guys that are planning on making their careers in Texas. I did that segment on the on our YouTube page called Who Are You? And I interviewed Austin Gustafson, second one that I did. And, you know, he's a guy who's barely 30 years old, grew up in racing. His father was a trainer. And, you know, he's sitting there telling me how excited he is to race in Texas. And, you know, 5 years ago, nobody would have said that. So it's a great situation down here. And, you know, we're looking forward to a big night and hopefully a good closeout to the meet.
Well, you know, I can't remember when this came up with Steve Asmussen. But in the last year, year and a half, we had a very similar sentiment where he said it's, you know, I think I saw him in the paddock at Lone Star or whatever it was and or Sam Houston. And he said, I said, well, you know, it's got to be a bonus for you and you know, some of your clients, particularly Texas based. And of course, for his dad. And he said it only makes sense. You know, the Texas, which has got a, you know, a culture of the horse. It's been crazy that how stymied the racing interests were for so long. Not just the racing interests, Nick. What about the horse playing interests and how difficult the state government has made it for players?
Yeah, that'll have to be a residual benefit because that part's not quite been addressed. Hopefully in 23, there's somebody in the Capitol that we're going to have to get rid of in order to achieve that. But given the changing demographics in the state, that might happen without anybody really putting forth much effort. But yeah, I mean, the crazy thing about what had happened in the racing industry is that, you know, Texans are so bold and so proud and so convinced that, of course, we could exist on our own. But we had allowed the neighboring states to all develop significantly stronger racing programs, despite us having, you know, essentially limitless land and a ton of money. And so, yeah, the racing industry just sort of went by the boards, and that really was unfair. So the influx of funds that has helped the purse account stabilize a little bit. Obviously, the competition for the winter signals down here is very robust, being that, you know, Fairgrounds and Oaklawn are both within a 5-6 hour drive from here. So there's a lot of competition in the area. But, you know, we try to find our niche with the nighttime racing and things like that in support of guys like Steve Asmussen and Carl Broberg, but J.R. Caldwell and Danny Pish, Gustafson, you know, these guys that have really increased their participation because it's so much more lucrative to do so has helped it happen. And, you know, you're looking at the card tomorrow night, you've got at least a couple of horses that are going to be short priced favorites in these stakes races, but they've been competitive against open company. You know, Mr. Moneybags looked for a second during the Houston Racing Festival as if he was going to win the Stoner Side Sprint over Greeley and Ben. And there were a couple of horses in there that came right back and ran in the Whitmore. So it's nice to see. And while these state bred days are often times to showcase just a few, I think we've got a nice number of horses that we're going to see go postward.
You got something lurking on the playlist before tomorrow's Sharpie session?
I think the 75-minute Sharpie time tomorrow, which I'm sure everybody is just waiting by their computers to have it start. So 4:40 p.m. local time, Trey Styles and I will go through the card. Trey is not playing in the contest. He cannot, as a Sam Houston employee, and I know he is very, very jealous. But I think the highlight of it is the Star of Texas, which goes as the ninth, and it's a really evenly matched field. I've been alerted to the fact that I probably botched the morning line, not making Algebra the favorite. I felt as if Algebra was likely likely to get into a pace duel. And I made Gold Pilot the favorite, who's now third off a layoff. It looked like he was going to get a good setup going a mile. I like Kenai Bob, the eight, who's going to be third off the layoff today and stretching back out off the H-Town, where I thought he ran well. He was in close attendance of the pace and ended up flattening out a little bit late. He got more effective going long last year as the season went on. And I think Francisco Bravo very quietly does an excellent job. I don't have any information on these two recent workouts, but I'm guessing they were pretty strong. Both bullets at 5/8 in the last couple of weeks, which leads you to believe that he'll be ready to handle the extra ground without any issue whatsoever. I think the best race on the card in terms of one that I'm really looking forward to seeing how it unfolds is the seventh, the Bar Alas, at 6 furlongs. It brings together three-year-old fillies. In years past, Texas Champions Day was run in the early part of the winter, late fall, and so this was a two-year-old race. It's now a three-year-old race. And the 1-2-3 finishers from the 2 Altozano back on February 19th are back. Texas Thunder, Eagle Express, and Jan's Turn to win. And I think the best way to handicap this race is really to throw all three of them out. I think they kind of sparred in a what ended up being a weak race, and I think the new shooters are really interesting, including Talanda, who's facing Texas Breds for the first time, being by Bind. This is an Austin Gustafson trainee, a homebred. She beat Open Company rather easily last time out in wire-to-wire fashion. Now, there's a great deal of speed in this race, and that could set up for a couple. My price horse is the 4, I'm a Sky Traveler, who's coming back on short rest for Ronnie Cravens. We're going to show the replay on Sharpie Time tomorrow night. This horse got off to a very slow start in her last outing and ended up having to make an early move to contest the pace, stayed on really well to the finish, and I think shortening up to 6 furlongs, being able now to sit back and make one run, is really going to bring out the best in her. The late pick 5 starts in the Yellow Rose, just one more spot for me to touch on. This is a really fun race with Lady Ave coming in top form for Steve Asmussen, having won 4 in a row. Now, since he got this mare, she's won 8 out of 9 races. She is just a win machine. They've handled her very carefully. This is really the first ambitious placement that she's had, and she's running into Bernie and I'm a Discreet Lady, both of whom are top Texas bred sprinting fillies. And I like She's Our Fastest, who ran well in this race last year, missed by a neck to I'm a Discreet Lady. Cuts back from 7.5 to 6, 2 turns to 1 here off of a good effort at Delta for Jade Gellner. And when she faced Bernie back on January 20th, she had no chance. There was no pace on whatsoever. Bernie really cruised on the front end, and I think it really benefited her. So I'm thinking that with She's Our Fastest, she's going to get the right kind of setup. But yeah, all in all, a fun card. We've got those 2 short price favorites early. Singapore Flash in the 2nd and Mr. Moneybags in the 3rd. We do have an early pick 5 that's going to start on race 1. It's a mandatory payout. Otherwise, we would have had to carry over anything that carried over to the late. Probably not going to carry over anyway, but it's a mandatory payout in both pick 5s and the Space City pick 6 tomorrow night. We've got a small carryover into tonight, so if we somehow can get a double carryover, this would definitely be a fun card for it.
Very cool. All right, so She's Our Fastest, the 4 and the 6th. The 4, I'm a Sky Traveler in the 7th, and seemingly everybody, me, you, and Mary, landing on Kenai Bob in the Star of Texas. I talked about him with Trey on Wednesday as well, and he liked Algebra. And you know, feel free, by the way, Nick, I don't know if you heard me on Wednesday, but feel free to co-opt my terrific line about using the first time any of us have used Algebra since high school.
I like it. I'm a fan. That could be the line. All right. I was thinking of Algebra Solves the Equation, but that could be better. So, it's funny on that topic that I thought about it for years and years, and as just an amateur race watcher and call listener, so to speak, I would think like, you got to have a line ready and you got to be ready to say something, and you actually call a race, and it's like, yeah, I'm trying to remember a million things, but those I would be ready for. Yesterday, I was watching the Fox Sports 2 broadcast, and so I heard Maggie and Lafitte talking about how hard it had been for Gold Bear to break his maiden. And so I said in the call, it took him a year to break his maiden and then 8 days to win his 2nd race. So it's fun to have something ready when you do. And of course, it seems like when I plan on a certain horse winning so that I can say that, they never do. So, but we'll hope for Algebra.
Let's turn to some other options. There is the fun card at Aqueduct. May end up being a little chalky. The starter handicaps, essentially, that fill out the entire afternoon, 10 races. There is the cross country as well. A couple of pushes, Nick.
Yeah, I thought the ninth, Caixa Electronica, is probably one of the more wide open ones in terms of the races on the card. You did say it's going to get a little chalky at certain points, but yeah, you've got a decent group coming together with Zoomer in really good form. First off, the claim for Linda Rice, and Answer In, who looks like the one to beat. Second off, the claim for Robbie Falcone, comes in off a really good effort, went second to Big Engine. 10 Strike, Marshall Graham and his partners reached in and took More Grateful for 45,000 last time out. He's probably the main speed, and I guess that makes him a little bit dangerous. I'm not sure how much Whistling Birds might want to keep up after American Cell, not generally the most aggressive out of the gate, but it's a fun race. And you know, I think depending on how the board looks, Repo Rocks might end up, I don't know why this horse is called Repo, but he might be the one that you want to bet, because he could be 9-2 or 5-1, and that's going to be the right kind of value there. I haven't quite settled on my pick. I would love to pick Zoomer, but I think he's really going to have to hustle at 7 furlongs, might need a little bit more pace than he's going to end up getting. The eighth is the mile and 3/8 race, which is always a lot of fun. This is the Stud Muffin, named, of course, for the venerable gelding who won a number of races for Bruce Levine years ago. And Blewett's going to try and wire this field. I'm not completely convinced that Blewett is really any great shakes. And so I think you're going to have some other opportunities. Air Attack ran really well in this race to win last year when he was in the care of John Toscano. And I'm guessing that Rob Atcher's claimed him with an eye on this, being that it's a $75,000 purse. He flattened out a little too much last time for me. I was surprised that he ran as poorly as he did. I joked with Marshall the other day that he told me that this is original intense prep for the Trail's End, which comes up next month, at the end of the Oaklawn meet. So he's in here trying to get a race in before he ends up going long in there. Bar 14, who previously had just been a sprinter, is now, I guess, a router, and is going to try and get on the pace as well. So it ends up being a really, really fun race, really interesting group going the mile and 3/8. I do think Original Intent actually has a chance. I think his stablemate, Roman Empire, is not without chance either. Second off the claim, it's probably a little bit more so the latter half of the entry. So yeah, it's an interesting card. I mean, I'll have my thoughts up later today, and certainly plenty of work to do on that, as well as the cross country, which I think includes some of the good races from Oaklawn. So fun Saturday, all starting early in the morning and going on until the late hours of the night with us.
Exactly. And regarding that, let's remind people, 5:55 Central. So 6:55 Eastern, basketball, and all kinds of, it's a big day. And we've got to go. I'm going to get I've got the card half written for New Orleans, because we've got to go tomorrow morning at 10 to a christening. So
how about that? Who schedules it on Dubai World Cup Day? Not that you would have been peeled to the TV, but man, it's a big racing day.
Well, I certainly wasn't going to be peeled to the TV. For that.
Right. It's a good Houston kind of night, though. At least your christening will be over by then, because the Cougars are going to play at night and poised to hopefully get to the Final Four. They're now the favorite in the tournament.
How about that?
Pretty quickly, right? I mean, their draw now, I guess, is easiest, although they would have Villanova in the next round. So, I mean, not that Villanova is anybody who's passed.
No, not at all. I got to do a research.
Yeah, this has been a nice little run, and I identify as a U of H alum, just grad school, but yeah, very exciting.
Ah, there you go. So you get to, I didn't realize that, actually, from the grad school side. And how long has it been? When was Phi Slammajama?
Ooh, 84?
Yeah, something like that.
Well,
yeah.
Almost 40 years.
Wow.
Yeah, long time ago. That was, I remember my late father told me that of all the sport, and of course he was a huge sports fan, that's why I am too, but he said of all the heartbreaking things that happened in sports for him, losing that, the Cougars losing that game to NC State was the most heartbreaking by far.
That was it was an unbelievable game.
It was, yeah. That was a really good team too. I mean, but, you know, and given what ended up happening with Jim Valvano, I think that whole like game and circumstance has this sort of mystical kind of aura to it, with him, you know, running around looking for somebody to congratulate and to hug. Yeah. The excitement. I mean, it's just the, you know, and looking at Olajuwon standing there like completely befuddled as to how this happened. It's the great yin and yang of sport, right? That you have these people, you know, they're jubilant and the, it is truly the agony and the ecstasy. You see it all in one image. But yeah, I think I was like 4 or 5 months old when that happened. So, it was, at least he had me to
It's a fallback on, right? That's
right.
Great. Too funny. I'm glad that came up. All right, well, enjoy, and good luck tonight. Anything tonight to note before we go?
We've got that small carryover. Here, I can zip through the card real quick. Trey and Jessica are actually going to do Sharpie time, and I'm going to take a rare night off of that, but I will, of course, be on the mic, and we're more than likely going to be off the turf one more day just to give it a chance to dry. We got about 2.5 to 3 inches of rain on Tuesday.
Yikes.
That's the main reason. I would say that if I was going to push anybody that's in a non-turf race, I've got a wild horse in the eighth. I don't know if he can win. You may want to just play him underneath the nine, Fando, who's going to be making up some ground. He's finally going to get some pace to run at. This horse fires every time. He's just sort of a one-run plodding horse that needs things to really shape up in front of him. I don't know. Hopefully they will. I thought the six, Big Power Red, in the sixth, taking a big class drop, second off the claim for Scott Young. He's in a much more realistic spot class-wise. But I will say this is an awfully challenging pick six sequence. So fingers crossed that maybe we can get a double carryover, because I think it has that potential. First leg starts with a tough $25,000 maiden claimer. I thought Igor Ote on the outside might be the quickest early and maybe could wire the field, taking the big class drop for Tina Early, who's had some hard luck at the meet, so hopefully he can get over the hump.
All right, good. All right, I'm glad I asked. And we'll watch for Fando, 12-1.
Watch for the bad morning line.
11.
Right. There's always that possibility.
Well, then you're it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you're out here pushing the horse, he's going to get bet.
That's true. I should be careful about that. It was really little did people realize there was a period of time too where I made the buyer figures and did the morning line. So I really could have manipulated the races as much as I could. I promise that I didn't, but I've heard a lot of chatter about people talking about my morning line skills, and the biggest response is at least he's a decent race caller.
Isn't this funny how this has evolved? At first you were a great figure maker and a great morning line maker. So it's, the more
I'm
things you do.
Morning line maker and an adequate race caller. Right?
Well, and of course, yeah, it you're famous for manipulating those figures and morning lines, because that's a really a thing.
Yeah, I'll tell you, that's a real way to stardom and wealth, right? That's the kind of stuff. Some of the things that people think actually goes on in racetracks and racetrack operations really blows my mind. The level of sophistication is just really out there.
Nick Tamaro, everybody. NTAM 1215 and later tonight at Sam Houston, but tomorrow particularly the big Texas Champions card, and couldn't make it this year, Nick, but we'll, because I was still, still kind of recovering from the...
You're still jet lagged.
Yeah, a little bit, but we'll put it on the agenda for next year.
Sounds great. Looking forward to it, my friend. Talk to you next week.
Nick Tamaro, thanks. Let's take leave, and we got about 10 minutes. I've got I guess we're not going to get the boys, so I tried. Let's get Popo in here and get some form to win after a very good Wednesday at Happy Valley. We'll see how Popo's charted, and we'll see how much closer Popo is as well to giving us the word that we all are going to get the new revised interface for form to win. Popo, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve.
Yeah, I know you were following along because we were going back and forth while I had Dick on, and we were having so much fun playing Happy Valley on Wednesday. And actually, coming up next week, I'm looking forward to the synthetic track. I should really get. I'm going to get Paul Matisse in to help us on the, because he loves those quote unquote dirt cards at Shot 10. So maybe we'll get Paul in. But I'm looking forward to playing next week, next Wednesday, Shot 10. But first and foremost, how close are we? Are we? Question every week.
The never-ending question, Steve.
Yes.
A meeting this afternoon with the guys in Australia on the other deal that we're trying to get closed. So I would say definitely within 2 weeks. I'm not going to say next week. It may be a possibility, but I'd say 2 weeks out, we're good. The app's done. It's just closing stuff on the business end now.
Gotcha. All right. Well, you'll tell us, and people can see obviously the difference between the graphics that I put up and the ones that, you know, Papo's got. He's been finalizing and working with the developers to, you know, on the interface. So you're getting a preview anyway of what it looks like.
Right. Yeah, and it's still using the exact same data. See, it's just the new version works much better on the mobile devices, and then the new app also, the way that we built it is we can custom build new things into it without having to change a lot of stuff. So we'll be eager to get feedback from the users, because anything they would like to see in the app, we'll be able to also build into it.
Nice. All right. Well, we'll keep, you'll send up the flare when the time is right. But in the meantime, you can use it. You can download it, 2 free races a day, and get used to it. Get used to the interface. You set the distances and the parameters as you experience them and the way we talk about them. I mean, all I did on Wednesday basically was, you know, have a pretty tight range when it comes to the meters. When I do Sha Tin and Happy Valley, you know, if it's a 1200 meter, I basically go, you know, 1200 to 1250. I keep it pretty tight. And you know, when it comes to hard distances, to the miles and the furlongs, you know, I basically go over maybe a half furlong, you know, 6 furlongs to 6.5, 8.5 to 9 in those ranges. What are we looking at? We got that big card tomorrow at Fairgrounds that we've talked about all week.
Yeah, I kind of looked at several different races, Steve, starting in race 6, that Costa Rising, going 5.5 furlongs on the turf. I set my distances between 5 and 5.5. And then on average form to win, you had the 2-horse Classy John, who's 9-2. The 3-horse X-Clown, who's also 9-2. But the prize horse you may want to get involved is the 8-horse, A Song for Arch, who absolutely fit on form to win and is a little bit of a prize as compared to the two favorites.
Interesting. All right.
And then race 7, the Tom Benson Memorial. Nothing too clever here. Hendy Woods and Lake Lucene or Lake Lucerne, both coming off a layoff, though, so you never know if they may need one. I thought the 8 was a bit interesting. She Can't Sing, sprinted most of her career, first time routing last time out, and had a good number. If I just ran form to win using her last race, she absolutely fits. So I think she can build off to that, and she's 6-1, so I think she'll be the third or fourth in the price, and I think she's the value horse in that particular race.
That's the Chris Block winner coming out of the, what was that, the Alstall? All right.
And then race 9, the New Orleans Classic. Once again, form to win. It looks kind of chalky, Olympiad and Proxy. The only horse that I thought was interesting, that I don't think he can win, but you could maybe fit somewhere in underneath, is Chess Chief for
Dallas
Stewart. I didn't like his race. I didn't like him pointed to Goldstream in that Pegasus race. He's back on Lasix. He loves Fairgrounds, Steve. 5 of 10 at the track. And so if he's going to fire, it's going to be there. So at 8-1, and I think he'll be absolutely all of that, maybe a little bit higher. If you can get him in underneath Olympiad, maybe you can, the exact will pay a little bit more.
Well, and that's everybody's approach has been trying to find the other horse. Frank McGoey on Wednesday or yesterday talked about Superstock. James earlier thought that Promise Keeper not only could lock up in terms of the exacta, he thought the Promise Keeper can win this. Happy American is going to be, you know, moving late. There probably isn't enough pace to set him up. You got Proxy, who, you know, is still kind of finding himself, probably might end up being this week's 4-year-old to add to the handicap division, you know, going forward, that kind of thing. So there's no shortage of interesting. It's too bad that this thing doesn't have, you know, usually I when there's 6 nice horses, I don't decry that we don't have a bigger field. This actually, with a couple of others, would have been really fun. I mean, especially if there was another pace horse, a clear pace horse potentially to go with Olympiad and you know, kind of stir the pot a little bit. But it's still a nice group of 6.
yeah, nice group. And then moving on to race 10, the Nunez Memorial, I mean, formed to win like Sacred Life and the Bombi, but they're not, I mean, for Tad Brown Horses, Steve, they're not world beaters by any means. Sacred Life won for his last date. Devani's had lots of breaks in his career. So, I mean, the now horse is Fantine on the outside, but he's not going to be a price either. So it looks a bit chalky. The horse I'd be interested in who fit on form to one, which I'm not sure how he fit, but he fits, is 40 under for Maker at 10 to 1 on the morning line. Absolutely fit. I don't know what happened in his last race, but if you go two back in that Colonel Bradley, he posted a decent number. And so, yeah, going a little bit price shopping there, but maybe get 40 under involved at somewhat of a price.
That leaves us with the Oaks and Derby.
Yeah, I briefly looked at the Oaks. It short field and looks chalky. So nothing there for me worth speaking about. I'm just gonna watch the race. Being very interested to see how the champion comes back in that particular race. And Calhoun's filly, you know, she could, if the other horse needs it, she could absolutely step up. But I think it goes through Echo Zulu. Looks like she's been pointed here. I mean, I would prefer to see a race. I mean, they've kind of put all their eggs in one basket here. But, I mean, they rested her for a reason. She got some time off, and her drills look solid. So let's see if she shows up tomorrow, Steve.
Exactly. And the feature.
Yeah, and the Louisiana Derby. So it's one thing you have to keep in mind when using form to win in these three-year-old races. You've only got limited data sets. So I was only interested in horses that had already run a mile. So that's going to exclude several starts for some of these. But it was Epicenter, number one. And then Kapuna was the price horse who absolutely fit. And Karen Prove off his last race. Now I know he just broke some maiden two back. But fits, coming off Lasix, you know, would be a question mark, but he ran a solid second down at Churchill in November without Lasix. So, and he's bred for the distance. I mean, this is almost the Derby distance. So minus 16th horses stretching out to a mile and 3/16. You got to do a little bit of pedigree work, and he fits. Kapuna fits on pedigree work, and so does Epicenter. And then Pioneer of Medina was third on form to win and also fits on the pedigree front.
Not that you're going to get a complete read per se, but as Frank McGoey mentioned yesterday, Capone has been working with Hidden Connection for Calhoun, and you got a little bit of an insight from him. I thought Zozos, just because Cox with a lightly raced and seemingly, you know, nice type of three-year-old here, just felt like the other interesting horse. It feels like he'll, of the two 8-to-1, you know, new faces, he and Kapuna, it feels like Zozos will take more money than Kapuna.
Yeah, I would think so. Brad Cox at the Fairgrounds, or Brad Cox really anywhere. He's going to take money. I mean, my notes on that, I thought the horse looked a little bit rushed into the race, which, I mean, they're trying to get points, you know, to get the horse into the Derby. They don't have to win it just to get points. But from a pedigree standpoint, I thought he was a little weak for this distance. But, you know, we'll see.
He's a Munnings out of a Forestry. The way he won that allowance on the stretch out, boy, Right.
And the sound of youth, and I know that Mr. McGooey had made some comments about his work on March 19th. So after he said that, I went back and watched all his works. And on the 26th, it was the same type of work, Steve. He was very eager early, and then he didn't look exactly comfortable coming down the lane. So I don't. He may just not be a good workhorse. You know, I looked at three of his last works, and they all look the exact same. So I wasn't quite sure what to do with him. You know, off the layoff, he needed that Fountain of Youth to get some foundation back into him.
And sure.
It wasn't his fault. It just didn't materialize in that particular race.
Well, He worked fast coming into that, and then worked fast again bulleting into this. James liked him. James is kind of, I don't want to say married to him, but I know James likes him. Well, we'll get the charting up, Popo, and well, I'll read.
Sorry, Steve.
No, it is. Sorry, look at you. Yeah. All right. Well done. We'll touch base next week. I appreciate it.
Yeah, sounds great, Steve. You have a great weekend.
Popo Core 1 and Form to Win. Both, of course, on Twitter. Form to Win. Download it. 2 free races a day, and we'll keep walking you through it. It's just a quick, handy, immediate way to get a handle on the races. I want to thank Hammer and Chris Katulak, Scott Schapp, and James Scully, Jay Pribman, live from New Orleans, as was Schapp, Mary Rampolini, always on the road, Nick Tamaro, and Popo. And thanks to Case. It's been a fun week. Good luck today if you're playing. Talk to you on Monday, everybody. Another big week on hand with Florida Derby Week and with Arkansas Derby Week. Thanks.
The Ponce Family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Nationally recognized for making stallions since 1933 and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading freshman sire, Mosler by Warfront, as well as Divining Rod, Frisian Fire, and Super 99. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the foaling barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to
The PA Horse Breeders Association introduces the Pennsylvania Stallion Series. 4 brand new races to be run at parks for PA-sired, PA-bred two-year-olds. There are 2 $100,000 contests on August 22nd, PA Day at the Races. September 24th, PA Derby Day, has 2 more races, each with a $200,000 purse. The PA Stallion Series, yet another reason why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race. For more, please visit PABred.com.
Your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9
At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing